Today we're back to writing books on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Author Frank Lyons has 4 books at least to his credit. We'll ask him how he does it, then ask Harrison Keeler for the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. It's an awful lot of writing, Frank.
Indeed.
Whatever prompted you to start writing books?
I've always liked to write since my childhood out in South Dakota, perhaps guided by my mother. I was one of 7 children, and she had been an English teacher. I spent my career as an engineer. And there was a great deal of writing associated with engineering and the financial matters that went with it, and it was always of interest to me. And when I finally retired, I decided I would start writing.
You know, you say engineer, and that's one of those interesting words that can mean anything. It can mean you're driving a locomotive,
right.
You're working a device, you're creating things. What kind of an engineer were you?
I am a mechanical engineering with a degree from South Dakota School of Mines. The last years of my life, I ran my own company, helping companies make strategic manufacturing plans. Before that, for 31 years, I worked in the Deere Corporate Engineering Department, where we planned, designed, built factories, foundries, offices, distribution centers around the world.
That's interesting, because I at one time expressed an interest in mechanical engineering until I discovered it required more attention and precision than I was capable of.
I started out to be an aeronautical engineer until I realized you needed some math to do that, and I...
So you're talking to 2 failed engineers,
yeah,
here, Frank. Well, what prompted when did you start writing?
I started writing when I finally sold my company about 14 years ago. And I don't know that there was any particular motivation other than maybe a little nagging from my daughter and my son. Why don't you put on paper stuff about your family? And I did that. And then I went on and wrote other books on other subjects, 3 of them about real things that happened, and 1 of them a novel, a novel about massive international corporate corruption.
Oh, really? That certainly is a work of fiction, I would think.
It is a work of fiction, but every time I wrote about some outrageous event, and in my own mind, I said, that could never happen. And then I would read the Wall Street Journal or some other paper and found something even more outrageous than I had written.
Was the first book the one about South Dakota?
The first book was called William and Mary, which really was a story about my parents, who were named William and Mary Lyons. The second book was South Dakota Days, about the 30s and the 40s and the Great Depression.
I bet somebody the other day that they could not sit down and meet you and talk to you within 3 minutes finding out that you were A, Irish, and B, from South Dakota. What's the mystique of South Dakota?
I don't have a good answer. It was simply that I was raised there on a farm with 7 siblings and a great rollicking Irish type home environment in a mixed neighborhood of Jews, African Americans, Norwegians, but mostly Czechs, just a complete mixture of people. And it's always been where my roots are. I still can go back to the bedroom on the farm where I was born. And I've just always had a connection with the farm. Yeah,
not everybody has roots that strong, though. And they are really strong in you. That's,
yes.
You know, if you tell somebody about Frank Lyons, you'll tell him he's from South Dakota and he's Irish, right?
That sums it up, huh?
No, not quite.
Well, it's a factor.
But what was, you know, I don't want to get too far away from your books, but Depression years in South Dakota could not have been easy.
They were certainly not easy. But as a child, bad stuff is where you don't have food or clothing or shelter or love. I had all of those. And the deprivations were simply something that other neighbors had. We felt very secure in our 10-family unit that lived in our house. But it was a terrible time. And I'm only going to read a very brief item, but the beginning of chapter one of the book called South Dakota Days, and the chapter is called The Great Depression, is a statement by Woody Guthrie, who most of us think is a singer, but he was also a great writer. And he said, "And with the wheat blowed out and the hardworking people just stumbling about, bothered with mortgages, debts, bills, sickness, worries of every blowing kind, I seen there was plenty to make up songs about." And somehow that struck me as the essence of what was going on. But fortunately, we were not that affected by it in our family.
Well, you know, if you have a farm and you're not caught in sandstorms, you can grow food. Dust storms, I guess, are the things that really came through the plains. Did they affect South Dakota?
They did. And when I was a boy, I thought our grasshopper plagues, the depression, the crop failures, the absolute bottom of the barrel economically was as bad as it got. But in later years, I read about the dust storms and the depression in Oklahoma and Texas, and I found out it was far, far worse elsewhere.
Yeah, well, those were terrible times. There's no question about it. And as a kid, you know, you would occasionally hear that what's over there is you can just see in the distance a dust storm, but nothing like being there and seeing those terrible clouds come piling across the horizon.
If I may read just one very short paragraph from South Dakota Days, it says, "For many, it was a devastating psychological experience that they could not cope. It was not uncommon for parents to abandon their families, commit suicide, or go into deep psychological depressions. The long duration of the Great Depression made it a way of life for a generation of people. Even after it ended, some people were too traumatized to ever resume a normal life."
Yeah. As a kid from the Depression, the one thing I carry away is always have a job, always have a check coming in, always work, because you're going to need it. But your novel is about what?
The novel is about, maybe I can say it more concisely by reading what it says in the back of the book.
Okay.
A Celtic shonicky, that is a soothsayer, foretells Robert Drood's destiny at his birth. After a childhood of poverty and sexual abuse in Ireland, he grows up in America. Because of his brilliance and ruthlessness, he becomes the CEO of a Fortune 500 company while in his 30s. To pay for his hedonistic lifestyle and rampant womanizing, he devises Byzantine schemes to plunder his company treasury while he wallows in the lavish perquisites of his high positions and brings his career to an ignominious end. Finally, he moves back to his birth in Ireland and associates himself with a brilliant Benedictine scholar who leads him to another life in a final step in his destiny as foretold at his birth by the Shaughnessy.
Where did that come? I'm hoping, based on your experience at Deer.
Well, several people have said that, and it is not. We hear about, you know, bad stuff, corporate corruption. I never witnessed it at Deer in any way, shape, or form. It is just that I know this stuff went on in the world.
Well, what put you in mind to write that? I mean, where did that idea even come from?
I really don't have a good idea. When I write, I just sit down. I have a vague notion. I just sit down and start writing something. And I will tell you, I will just very briefly tell you how the book started. It just, my fingers told the story. A black armored town car nosed into the basement of the imposing Manhattan headquarters of Titan Motors Corporation. Justin Cairncross stepped from the back seat, walked several feet to the elevator, and sped in whispery solitude to his suite on the 50th floor. Although the affairs of Titan Motors awaited his attention, his first priority was to attend to an imperative matter for American Semiconductor Corporation, known around the world as AMCO. As he passed his assistant's office, he said, "Call Robert Drood at AMCO in San Francisco and tell him to meet me here in my office early tomorrow morning. Have our legal counsel here to witness the meeting and tell a security officer to stand by. Let me know as soon as you set up the meeting." In a short time, his assistant confirmed the arrangements. Cairncroft said, "Good. Now call Ken Yee at AMSCO and tell him to be here a half hour after my meeting with Drood and set up a teleconference for later in the morning with the executives who report to AMSCO CEO. Yee and I will participate in the conference. Interrupt whatever I'm doing today if any difficulties arrive." Dennis Karan observed the flurry of actions precipitated by the bombshell information he had presented to Justin Cairncross during the last several days. Cairncross stuck his head into Karan's temporary office and said, "Dennis, can you stick around until tomorrow afternoon? I may need you." He did not wait for an answer. Dennis now understood what it was like to be the CEO of the largest corporation in the world and a board member of the prominent Silicon Valley company. When Dr. Drood and Dr. Yee received their calls from Justin Cairncross's office, they rearranged their schedules and agreed to scurry to New York as if they were prefects summoned to Rome by Caesar.
When you wrote that, you had no idea where it was going?
Oh, I did. This is getting a preliminary what's to come.
Right.
This guy, Robert Drood, had transgressed so egregiously that what this is about is they're calling him to fire him.
The only thing about that makes it a work of fiction is that he comes to a bad end.
Well, you know, people have always said to me, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I never liked that statement. You can teach old dogs new tricks. And this guy, in spite of his absolutely horrible behavior, goes back to Ireland with his tail between his legs, and he meets a brilliant Benedictine scholar, and he does find a way for redemption. He does have an epiphany in his life.
Are you working on another book now?
I am.
what's the matter with you? I mean, stop for rest.
Do you wish to hear about it?
Well, we got a couple of minutes.
All right. I'm not very far into it, but the most famous man in Ireland is St. Patrick. The second most famous man is St. Brendan the Navigator.
Oh, yeah.
And this, if I can get it together, it will be a historical novel about him having lived in 700 in Ireland, discovering America 300 years before Leif Erikson in almost a thousand years before Columbus. Now, the Indians would have another view. They said, we have 10 million people here already, so what's this about discovering us? But it must be a historical novel because there is not enough information on St. Brendan.
Are you writing these for your own enjoyment? Or?
Yes. I am, absolutely, but you set me up because all of them are about starvation, deprivation, and poverty. And the royalties for these books, which are mostly available on Amazon, the royalties will go to the St. Vincent de Paul Society. And in the back page, I say, in recollection of the millions of people who suffered hunger, starvations, and other deprivations in Europe during World War II, the royalties for Heidelberg Days and I might add the other books will be donated to the St. Vincent de Paul Society, which is founded in France in the 1600s and served the poor and the disadvantaged and later expanded to 100 countries around the world. I'm not going to tell you that I'm writing for the St. Vincent de Paul
right.
Society, but they are the ones that are receiving okay. the financial benefits. I do it for my amusement. I like to write.
Well, Frank, your time with us has been for our benefit. We really appreciate it. And I envy you your industry and the fact that you were able to turn so much of your life into prose, both factual and fictional. And I guess keep it up.
Well, thank you.
Do you have any idea of when the new book will be done?
No. There's a situation in my life that takes a lot of my time right now, but typically the books take 2 to 3 years to write.
It'll be done when you write the end.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much, Frank Lyons. This was fascinating.
Thank you for inviting me, gentlemen.
Okay. We've also invited Garrison Keeler to tell us about the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Talking to Frank Reynolds today, did that not inspire you to do a little more writing?
It intimidated me. How somebody can sit down like that with that discipline and write?
Yeah.
He's also involved in all kinds of other community activities. I don't know.
Well, come on, suck it up,
well,
tweet. Let's get
going.
So, for your summer reading, you were...
Well, last week we were talking a little bit about books that have been rewritten for good or for ill. I've got three more of those to suggest. That's an interesting genre. Two of them I wouldn't put much stock in. But you might want to look at them. If you're a fan of 50 Shades of Grey, there is a rewrite of that by a man named E.L. James, and it's called 50 Shades of Grey as Told by Christian, one of the other characters there. And there's also a rewrite of Gone with the Wind by Alice Randall. It's by one of the slaves in the household, and it's called The Wind Done Gone. There is also a serious rewrite. As you put it in a conversation once, Don, this is a conversation with the book. Many of you, if you were students in the 60s and 70s in college, read Albert Camus' The Stranger, that great work exploring existentialism that caused us all to sit late at night and talk about what existentialism was. But that is a great book. It begins with the words something like, this may not be a direct quote, "Mother died yesterday," or "Was it the day before?" Then the main character goes on to kill somebody, and the book is about the effects of that killing. An Algerian writer, Kamer Daoud, K-A-M-E-R-D-A-O-U-D, has rewritten Camus' The Stranger as the Mersu investigation. The narrator of that, Daoud's book, is the brother of the woman, of the man that that was killed by the main character in The Stranger. So it is really a serious exploration from the other side of Camus' book.
Do you ever get in an argument with the book?
Yeah, I do.
You know, sometimes a book, Gone Girl, produced a visceral reaction in me. I felt, I don't know how to explain how I felt, but I thought, ooh,
yeah.
It's a great book and beautifully done, carefully constructed, but oh my goodness, I wouldn't want to touch those people.
Have you read Annie Proulx's The Shipping News?
No.
She's a short story writer primarily, but and she's out with a brand new book that is on many summer reading lists about the logging industry called Barksides. But her first book with which she made a big splash is called The Shipping News, and it takes place in Newfoundland. And by the end of that book, everything in the room smells of codfish. you can't get rid of it for days. I mean, it is such a well-written descriptive book, but oh, geez, the smell and the texture of codfish is just, it's great, a great book.
One of the big ones is Shakespeare's greatest play, King Lear, and people were so, you know, so upset with that. They wanted a happy ending. They didn't want this terribly tragic ending, which, you know, if you work with the play for a while, you realize that's right. That's the way. But for, I don't know, almost a century, I think it was Nahum Tate or somebody rewrote it.
Right. So, well, another rewrite of a book that, yeah.
And that was, that held the stage all the time. And it was within, I think, at least in my long life, almost living memory, that they finally did it the right way. And now nobody would go back
right
to the rewrite. But have you ever been tempted to rewrite a book and change the ending?
Well, I used to rewrite poems. And, you know, I wasn't very good at studying for my English exams, but I was very clever at writing. And one of the first great works that I wrote was a parody of William Cullen Bryant's To a Waterfowl. And it was about the Mountain Lake sewer system. To a water, comma, fowl, F-O-U-L. And whither midst the depths, you know.
Oh, you are.
And I got an A on it, of course, and I passed English without really reading the books I was supposed to be reading.
Well, we passed our time limit. That's it for now. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week. We'll just keep right on scribbling, and we hope you'll join us.